So my name's Nick Townsend. I'm now chair of WAM, which is Windmill Hill and Manago Planning Group. I've been involved in it since its start in 2014. It feels like 100 years. I grew up in London and in the 60s and saw a lot of the tower blocks being built there and saw the damage they did. So I thought that battle would have been won because that had stopped in the late 80s and 90s. And I was shocked when we found out that a 14-story building was planned for St. Cats in Bedminster, an area that had been kind of neglected by the council for a number of years, basically. So that was in 2014. And then soon after that, more plans, it became like the Wild West in Bedminster. And we had four major plans there for building high-rise blocks at, you know, a very sort of dense level as well. So in response to that, which got passed by the council on the basis that they thought they had to do something, you know, with it, a local group got together in the windmill and formed WAM, set up a group, and we must have leafleted the place, the area, about 35 times. We've had meetings up to 150 people, and we also wrote out a community brief, and we're very much pro development, but it has to be decent development. And if I can say, you know, very, very briefly what we want, it's something like Wapping Wharf, you know, sort of six stories that's kind of an attractive place to come. So that's what we've always aimed for. I've never heard anyone say we don't want building here. We do understand the shortage of housing in Bristol.
Isn't it the obvious thing to do, though, is to build up? You know, this is the way you get more people in a small space, isn't it?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of research to show that you don't need to build up. In fact, there's a professor from UCL which shows that you can build at a dense level, but you don't need to build high-rise buildings. The level of density doesn't actually go up that much, you know, when you're making sort of 15-story buildings, and then you get all kinds of other disadvantages. So it's a bit of a false one that you can't have low level high density buildings.
Okay, so anyway, what were the initial plans for Bedminster Green? Because this is the big contentious one that's just gone through. What were the initial plans?
Well, there wasn't a kind of, you know, it was really, as I say, it was a bit like the Wild West, you know, that these developers, there was Firmstone that bought St. Cats, and Paul O'Brien bought the Malago Road, the site between the railway and Malago Road. That was then sold on. There was Dealey Freed who bought the NCP car park. And there was the Dandara who bought the area of the old factory there, whose initials I've kind of forgotten at the moment. But it's an old engineering factory there between Stafford Street and Little Paradise. And then they were urged eventually to get together to agree on a framework, because they all wanted to build as high as possible, you know, sort of 22-story homes, 22-story tower blocks. But the thing about the Bedminster framework was that local people didn't have any input in it at all. It was devised by by the developers.
Well, surely local councillors do get a say in that they can either refuse or grant planning permission for these things.
Yes, eventually, but in the actual consultation of the plan of the Bedminster framework, we had no say, and then it was just agreed by the council, so who are presumably were desperate to adopted by the council, who were desperate to build houses. So we didn't feel, I don't think local people felt that they were involved in this at all. We actually developed our own community brief early on, little document, and we met Marvin Rees. It must have been 2015 or something. And we thought that he'd been elected on the promise of wanting to work with local groups. But I have to say we found him not very forthcoming, and he was very suspicious of us, and he took the community brief, but we didn't hear from him again. So,
the mayor is suspicious of local people. Why?
Well, he just backed out of the room. He thought, he said that, I don't know basically who you people are. I want to hear from other groups in the area. So he wasn't welcoming at all. I must say he was pretty charmless, to be honest. And we didn't feel very well received by him at all. And he never, ever got back to us. So I think we were correct in our assumption. There was eight of us there. We all went up on an afternoon. People took time off work, and I think people felt it was mainly a bit of a waste of time, really. So
it's interesting because there is this kind of community planning network. It's formally part of the council. There are something like 20 groups around the city of local people who take an interest in planning applications in their area. Sometimes they will comment, etc. And many of them are professionals and architects and people like that. And it doesn't seem as if the mayor really understands that this is one of the formal parts of the planning process. So, I mean, do you get the impression that he's listening to the speculators, the land speculators and the developers?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'd feel embarrassed because I voted for him myself, but it was only after he was elected that he came out and spoke about his approval for building up. He hadn't said that before. I would never have voted for him. So, throughout this 5 years, unmistakably, we felt that the council, we've never felt confident that we've been listened to by the council, and that some deals have gone on with, we know that some deals have gone on with the developers.
WAM has had some achievements, I hope. What have you managed to achieve, even if you haven't had the ear of the mayor?
Yeah, well, I think we've done, I mean, I don't think we could have done much better in a way. We still, at this stage, after 5 or 6 years, there's no tower blocks been built there. They've got permission. They've now, the Dandara have got their buildings been approved. So if they can build that, that will happen. But, we've managed to get a couple of the developments, A2 Dominion on Malago Road and St. Tats. One of them got delayed and then refused, and then the other one got refused as well. But the thing is, Tony, as you well know, you can do this, but they will just keep coming back. And what I've realised is you might think one of them, like Paul O'Brien, who was a builder, he withdrew, but then he sold it on to someone else. So There's always another dip.
Can you tell us about this latest planning approval? Because I was in the Bristol City Council at the end of last year when there was a large application for large tower blocks in Bedminster, which was actually turned down. Now, I was quite surprised because, you know, I know that the council officers don't really like to turn these down because it means that there may be an appeal and it might cost the council a lot of money to go through that appeal process. Then if they lose, they have to pay the costs again of the, you know, the developer. And so they do tend, if they think that a developer is particularly dogged, they too tend to just accept what they're trying to do because they can't afford to appeal it. But anyway, so is it a similar sort of development that's now been approved to last year? Because I'm interested in this process where a developer comes along, the community gets together, they manage to stop a development with big tower blocks, you know, 20 stories or whatever, and then lo and behold, a few months later, it all comes rolling on again.
Absolutely, and I'm bemused by it because the Dandara one, which got permission, you know, was approved last month, is only about 100 yards from Firmstone, that was refused in January, and they're quite similar buildings with the similar problems of, you know, being too high, overshadowing. Too dense, no play space for children. And if anything, the Dandara building, 16 story, is worse. And for example, it was made of concrete, so it's got a huge carbon footprint. 40% of the flats are below national minimum size, so they're the size, as one of the councillors says, of a budget hotel room. One in five flats have less than the minimum daylight. They overlook and overshadow the St. Catherine's Place, which is sheltered housing for elderly people, and reduce their light. And affordability is around 6%. And the affordable flats are in a separate place to the main building. So, so we were very surprised when the planning officer, who'd been against the St. Catherine's one, was in favour of this. And they recognised all the problems and then said, well, we know it's not perfect, but, on balance, we think it's beneficial to the local community.
You have said, Nick, some pretty shocking things there. This idea of having rooms with no natural light, the idea that a flat is below the minimum size of a flat. We're talking here about, you know, the equivalent of, say, a student flats, or, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, little tiny boxes for people to live in. So, how is it that developers can actually put together a plan which includes things which are below minimum standards, and then it gets the boxes are all apparently then ticked?
Yes, well, the chair of the meeting called this a new product, because the way they got it through was that they would have extra public areas like a gym or another room. So he thought that this made up for the lack of private space. So you'd think that Dandara and the council would never heard of COVID and the effects that that's going to have, because it is likely, even when we don't know how long COVID's going to go on for, and if there's going to be, you know, it looks like in the future there may be more pandemics, that doesn't happen, there'll be a lot more people working from home. So we think this is going to create huge problems for the future in terms of mental health, because a lot of these flats don't have, you know, don't have minimum light, don't match minimum light standards. So the relation with that and depression is very well known. And 76%, I believe this is right, 76% had bedrooms without windows. And I asked at the committee meeting how many of those councillors slept in a bedroom without a window, because I do think that's really, really shocking. So it should have been turned down. And just to talk about the meeting itself, there were the committee meeting, there were 11 councillors. The ones who live locally.
No, I'm assuming this is an online Zoom meeting or something.
It's an online Zoom meeting, yes. I've actually put in a complaint about it because I thought it was so badly chaired. I thought there was bullying going on and misleading the group. And one of the councillors we were told to have neutral backgrounds, and one of the councillors had a photograph of a high rise behind him. But what was more shocking in a way, and one of them, we didn't even see for the whole meeting, and all she said was, you know, for when the vote came. But what was shocking really was that this was the most controversial development, I think, in Bedminster, certainly in the time, 25 years I've been here, probably much longer. And six of them had absolutely nothing to say and didn't ask one question to the planning officer or didn't ask for any points of clarification. They just voted it ahead. So there's quite a few of us from the local community speaking, and we certainly didn't feel listened to. And it, you know, the meeting wasn't supposed to be predetermined, but I'm afraid I had my very strong suspicions about that. And one of the things was that Dandara themselves, they didn't put up. They only had two people there because I think they knew it was a done deal.
What about the future for Bedminster Green?
I'm very fearful for the future because we've got. Firmstone has got their old plan has gone to an inquiry. They've got a new plan as well. So I don't know how that works, where they've got two plans, you know, they're backing two horses. That's come out. That's slightly better than the old plan. So that might get through. A2 Dominion's gone to an inquiry. Dandara also, at the same time as the Dandara thing went through, they also agreed, they approved a multi-storey car park next to it. And the reason they did that was to free up the Stafford Street car park, which is at the bottom of Windmill Hill. And the reason they did that was because they want to build another tower block there. They won't tell us that, but we strongly suspect that that's the reason why they want to do that. So I'm fearful that we are going, certainly the people in Windmill Hill are going to face a wall of glass over the next few years. And it doesn't even stop there, because there's a Bedminster Green too, which will spread down Whitecross Lane. And also it's not going to, you know, it won't help. It included in those flats is flats for up to 1,000 students. So I don't think we can even look at local people getting accommodation, and certainly if you know, the level of affordability is the same as with Dandara.
So I'm painting really a picture here, Nick, actually the relationship really seems to have broken down between the local people and the council, and the councillors not representing them. I mean, there must be, I'm hoping, I've got my fingers crossed here, that there have been some councils, at least, even though obviously not in the majority, that have been putting your point of view.
Well, certainly John Wellington, who's been a local councillor who's now stepping down, he's been very good, and we appreciate him standing out against his own party. Mark Wright's been good, and so has Steve Clark from the Green Party. But you say that the relationship's broken down. There never was a relationship. We felt, as I say, from the very beginning, distrusted and not not listened to at all, certainly not by the developers, who sometimes will come and give a presentation, but they're not really listening. I would make an exception for a partial exception for Dealey Fried, who want to develop the area around the city farm, even though they don't, they're very polite, but I'm not sure how much they listen. But someone like Dandara in particular, are quite a ruthless, have a reputation for being quite ruthless, had no intention of listening or consulting us. And that's the same with any with the council, I'm afraid.
I suppose, I mean, maybe Marvin Rees and the speculators, the developers, would say, well, we don't have to really listen to local people. We just do what we want.
Well, I think that's true, but I'm shocked. I think of one of the problems, and I'm not in the Labour Party, but one of the things they've been criticised for nationally is not listening. And I, you know, that is my experience of talking to Marvin Rees or representatives like Nicola Beach, I'm afraid. They just simply have never listened to us. So it's you know, you really...
Well, I mean, surely Nicola's job is to get things built, isn't it?
Yes, but I think that if you ask local people, they come up with fantastic ideas. They really do. They know what, you know, we've got a huge amount of social capital. We were really happy to work with the developers to produce something that would last. But I think what's going to happen, we're just storing up problems for the future here with these tiny flats, with, you know, the density of Dandara, the Dandara building, is three times what it, you know, what's recommended for the city centre. It's something like 600 units per hectare. So and as I say, you've got this wall of glass cutting off Windmill Hill from the city and overshadowing all the two-storey houses around there. It's just not right. You know, it's just... and I think they're doing it just to get the numbers of housing up and thinking short term.
Just finally, Nick, because we're getting to the end anyhow, just finally, if you've got anything to add.
I felt very demoralized after the committee meeting, planning meeting after Dandara. We will continue and we will... you know, do our best for the area. What we have here, we have a nice, you know, a great place to live, and we want that for the people that live down there, not for them to live in sort of rabbit boxes. So, you know, it's not a question of us being NIMBYs or our views being spoilt. It's wanting what we have, a really successful little area, you know, wanting it for the other people that are gonna live there. But as I say, I'm not hopeful with this present mayor and this present administration.
Okay, so how do people find WHAM and follow you?
We're on Facebook. We've got 700 members on Facebook. So just put in WHAM. If something about George Michael comes up, then you're on the wrong WHAM website. And if you put in, that's the Facebook, and we've also got a website. And if you just put in WHAM Bedminster, you know, there's lots of information there. But where all the stuff happens is on our Facebook, WHAM Facebook page. Until this pandemic, we were holding regular public meetings, but of course we can't do that now. So,
but will you have a Christmas party?
We have had in the past. We've always had a Christmas party, but unfortunately, I don't think we'll do that now. We always had it in the windmill, which is another huge shame because the windmill's closed. So I think Windmill Hill's really suffered recently.
Well, it's been one of the side effects of this pandemic, and I hate saying side effects with anything medical, but there's been, you know, the lack of community organising ability. The only way you can do it, apparently, is online now, and of course, it's not the same. But look, Nick, I've been involved in planning in St. Paul's too, where we've got loads of these massive student blocks going up, which really are even smaller than the ones you've got down in Bedminster. They really are rabbit hutch style, where you get seven people having to live in one flat. There's not even room for a dining table in the kitchen. It's just, you know, two seats and a TV, although I don't think many students actually watch TV. They'll probably be watching something on YouTube, on the smart TV or something. Do you think there's some scope for people across the city getting together to do something? Because it seems that these kinds of applications, particularly for these high-density, high-rise, ugly buildings, which we're going to have to live with forever in the city, for a long time, you know, they could be almost like a kind of plague, a virus.
Oh, absolutely. And we've seen it happen in London and other cities, Manchester. And, Bristol had a kind of, still got a good, you know, a sort of identity. But I think it could be anonymized by this growth of high-rise flats. And we know the problems that these store up. And I work with students from Bristol University and UWE. And I know the huge problems of mental health that particularly with Bristol University that they have, and living in a rabbit hutch is not going to help that at all, especially if you're paying 9,000 a year for it, so, or more, or whatever it is. So one of our members had a went to speak to the Green candidates yesterday, one of our steering committee. So I mean, they're kind. In 2014, Charlie Bolton, the local councillor, Green councillor, was actually for this, for St. Cat's site. So there has been a change, you know, and I think WAM's been effective in that way as well. You know, we've probably been one of the more, I don't know, maybe we flatter ourselves, you know, we've caused, a bit of resistance, you know, but maybe you just don't hear of other initiatives like your initiative going on in St. Paul's. But, you know, it'd be wonderful to get together in some.
I mean, isn't it this really just the bottom line is money, you know, bums on seats, people in buildings, as many as possible sold. And, you know, really, this is what it's all about. It's all about money. And actually, the citizenry doesn't stand much of a chance to try and make a better quality environment.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And as I said before, you know, say with the university's expanded hugely. Is that a sensible thing to do, really? They've become kind of huge corporations. They've changed very much in the, you know, the many years I've worked for universities, and they're kind of come to dominate the city. Whether COVID will change that, I don't know. I mean, I think that needs to be really, that whole area needs to be looked at as well.
One of the things I've heard is they've only had something like 40% of the international students they were expecting this year start the new university semester, term. So I mean, surely all these student flats, a lot of them, are going to be empty, but of course they can't afford to keep them empty. They'll probably be somebody will be renting them.
Yes. I mean, and certainly A2 Dominion, we mentioned this, that there may, you know, the bottom might fall out of the market. You know, you don't know with students. So there may, you know, just as numbers have risen, it might collapse. And A2 Dominion was saying where they can change their, you know, student flats into different kinds of flats, but again, that's not an ideal situation where you're converting student flats into to other kinds of flats. And of course, you've also got the, you know, the big new campus at Temple Meads as well. So with another big high rise there, I believe. So we need to, you know, and 1,000 students within Bedminster Green, we just need to stop and think about this, you know, when there's a shortage of housing for local people as well.
Okay, Nick Townsend, thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, thanks, Tony.
Nice one. Well,